This is Papa Hale speaking, and you are listening to a Wrestling with Words podcast. Visit us at WrestlingWithWords.com and follow us on Twitter at WrestleWords. If you don't, you are not Papa Hale's approved. But remember to always be fired up!
Hey guys, you are listening to the Fans of Wrestling show on the Wrestling with Words audio network. I'm Patrick with Danny Danger and the Screen Queen Tamika, as always. How are you guys doing tonight?
B-A-R-T-Y.
I'm all yelled out, but I'm ready to talk some wrestling.
So for anybody that did not know or did not pay attention to the loud and cute lady screaming front row, at SmackDown Live this past Tuesday night, and also 205 Live, only on the WWE Network for $9.99. Tamika, how was the front row live experience of a 3+ hour show?
I'm pretty experienced in it. So it wasn't such a pain for me. There people around me and not so experienced, so it was a little bit much for them. I, of course, tried to keep the energy going and the people entertained by yelling and screaming at the top of my lungs. But the show itself, actually both shows were, I don't want to say surprisingly good, but they were really good. Coming off of that Raw Monday, I was a little bit worried about SmackDown, but thankfully the great folks at SmackDown and 205 Live did not let us down. Not the good fans of Atlanta down. They did a really great job. So kudos to them. And again, made me scream and almost lose my voice. That's always a plus.
Apart from jobbing out the hometown boy, you know, which they like to do, especially when they hype that it's, you know, such and such's hometown, they want to job them. But, you know, even though it's to somebody who nobody gives a crap about at this point, you know, that I think that probably upset the fans, but they do that intentionally to upset the fans. Vince gets his jollies doing those kind of things.
They want a reaction, and the best reaction that you could have gotten, which is the reaction that they got, is AJ Styles' loss to Dolph Ziggler. When AJ, you know, this is Atlanta, this is his own state, you can call it his hometown if you like. He got on Twitter a couple weeks ago, whatever, and said, hey, wear red, Georgia Bulldogs. Huge pop as he comes out to the ring. It was fantastic. And then he loses to Dolph in a way that was almost kind of shocking. Like, wait, what? Is that the – really? And, yeah, they got the reaction that they wanted just because, again – the WWE does indeed get their jollies off of making hometown heroes and heroettes lose in front of those hometown folks. So I had someone next to me who's a smart fan as well, who says they're not going to let AJ lose. Like he said, I know this is his hometown, but there's no way they're going to let him lose. And I looked at him and I said, oh, you're so cute. Keep the faith. He's going to lose. And sure enough, there it is.
But let's talk about some of the upsides. You get to see Shinsuke Nakamura on the main roster. You get to see the return of the New Day.
Woods, being from Atlanta, of course, coming back out. I think they were expecting the New Day got a pretty decent pop. And as they used, like, telling Woods from Atlanta, the crowd was like, oh, yeah, he is from here. So that was a nice little decent pop. We've been waiting for a long time, it seems, since the Superstar Shakeup, for the New Day to show up in the SmackDown Tag Team Division. It is a much needed boost because the SmackDown Tag Team Division was never super exciting to begin with. And you had the same teams, American Alpha, the Usos, kind of going back and forth, round and round. You're throwing Ascension here and there. It's just not something that was dynamic. The New Day, for whether you love them or hate them, they bring a dimension. They bring yes, entertainment, funny, corniness, but they also are athletes. You have Kofi, who's been around forever and is still athletic as hell. You have Woods, who is an athlete and pretty, you know, good in his own right. You put Big E, that power. So that three-man team in the tag team division, there's such a combination of people you can put in there against these SmackDown guys. You put them against the Usos. You put them against American Alpha. It's going to give you new matches and new matchups and excitement in that tag team division, which is way past needed. So that was a great place to bring them back in Atlanta and to let the New Day know that, you know, New Day's got next. So that's pretty cool too.
And on the 205 Live, you got to see Cedric Alexander, who is back from injury and better than ever, defeating Corey Hollis.
You mean 125 Live. Sasha Banks was the featured performer on that show, and she decided the name was going to be 125 Live because she's not 205. So it's at least this week it was named 125 Live because she was the only thing that they hyped as far as leading into, hey, on 205 Live this week, Sasha Banks makes an appearance. So I might as well just go ahead and name the show after her.
Boss Live? Is that what it was this week? It was the Boss is Live. 125 Boss Live.
She called it hashtag 125 Live.
You know, I hate to agree with you, but I will. Sasha was hyped. Sasha got a bigger pop than the boys. Sasha got more attention than the boys. As she was out there ringside, there was a slight Sasha chant that started up. And, you know, here these guys are in the ring. They're working. And right, the people are
butts.
More. Right. The people are more focused on Sasha. So, again, 205 Live is still in its infancy. I would call it at this point maybe a toddler just taking those first couple of steps, learning how to walk. They're trying different things, and they haven't quite got that formula sewn up as to how to capture the crowd. Throwing Sasha in there, who is a not only just the name, but more than just a pretty face. She's a former women's champion, multi times around. Putting her in there because Fox is not a draw on her own. Fox is just Fox. Fox has been around too long. Sasha's new, exciting, fresh talent. You put Sasha on this roster and you'll have people go, oh, let me watch. What is Sasha going to do? Why is she there? It gives people, the casual WWE fan, a reason to either buy the network or actually to turn it on to watch the product. And a byproduct of that is, oh my God, they get to see great performances and great wrestling if they pay attention. I understand this. The WWE has done this in the past where they put a pretty girl with a wrestler to get everybody over and established. And this is the formula that they're going with 205 Live. They tried it with Cedric and Foxy. Now they've got Foxy with Noam Dar and Sasha with Rich Swann. We'll see where they take it, but I understand the purpose. I just want the point to be driven home for these casual WWE fans so they understand that what they're seeing in the ring is great. The guys next to me, I really, really had to contain myself during the Corey Hollis Cedric Alexander match because, you know, we've seen Corey Hollis and Cedric both here in our home promotions, you know, just kind of around in and around Georgia. And we know what kind of talent they both have. So they always have the potential to put on a great match, either singles or against one another. And this was a pretty solid, decent match. But the people around me, everybody wasn't into it. There were people on their phones. And I'm like, hey, guys, heads up, watch the match. If you watch nothing else, watch this match, you know, because what you're going to see is something that you can go back, you know, years from now and go, oh, my gosh, I remember when I was there for this, that, and the other. So, again, these folks, even in the front row who paid an exorbitant amount of money to be in the front row, just could not connect to the action in the ring. And that's what the WWE is trying to formulate some kind of reaction that they can get everybody to buy into the 205 concept. And good luck to them, because some of these folks, they've got a hard sell coming, or trying to get that happening.
So does anyone else find it kind of humorous that the couple that WWE decided to pair together, you know, seemingly out of the blue for storyline, both of them were semi-famously married within the past calendar year? Does that seem strange to anybody? That's kind of like firing somebody on their wedding day, that kind of thing? No connection? Okay, cool.
No connection, but I know at least one wife was there at the show last night, so I guess that's something.
The husband was there at the show probably too, I imagine.
Well, the husband was performing.
Was he with them?
I just didn't want to throw out any names, but, you know, a good friend of us, of our show and our ourselves,
I'm
was
saying,
there.
Yeah, in our lives. I'm saying Sasha's husband was there. Doesn't he tour with the brand?
Yeah, Mikazi? I forgot about him. Whatever his name is. Yeah, him. He tours with the brand.
Here.
So we don't care so much for him as we care about the wife in the scenario. Yes.
Just saying, and to have both of their spouses be there, and now they're in this faux relationship when there's, you know, that's why WrestleMerica closed, WWE, okay? You need to quit putting married folks in fake relationships on the TV. That's how Bulletproof goes.
Well, Danny, you brought up Bulletproof. What happened with Bulletproof Wrestling? Tell everybody.
Speculation abound as to the full reasons, but suddenly Bulletproof / WrestleMerica, they sent a message on Facebook, I guess it was the 17th, somewhere around there, and they said, oh, as of yesterday, both companies are closed and will no longer run shows. They said that the Bulletproof Dojo will stay open, continue to take students. They said, but WrestleMerica, Bulletproof Wrestling are closed as of yesterday. They didn't really give a reason why. They mentioned something about legally they can't really get into it. And they had, I guess, a show scheduled. They said everybody, like, you know, who's scheduled for this show will happen. It's going to be run by a different promoter. So basically be run under a different banner. Your tickets are still good. The matches will still happen. We're still going to happen. At least for the next show, I guess, as they already had people booked and didn't want to cancel booking for folks. But yeah, they didn't really go into it. Now it's not really, I guess it's known within some circles that Luke Gallows was at one time, I don't know if he still is, co-owner of WrestleMerica. He was one that was working with Bulletproof. I guess, you know, the Bulletproof name kind of came as much from him as anybody. And he and Amber O'Neill, his former wife, are going through a divorce. So my speculation is that it has something to do with the divorce proceedings as far as divvying up the, you know, the monetary and property between the couples. So you got to close some things, basically get cash value for it, and then you can divide that amongst the two, so that you don't have to run a business either. So that's my speculation. Nothing's come out. Like they said at the time, they weren't really legally allowed to go into too many details. We haven't heard anything else or much about it since. But I mean, that's sad, and that's hurtful to the overall wrestling scene in Georgia. I mean, they did well. They brought in good talent. I mean, WrestleMerica would average about 200 people per show once a month down in Barnesville. Bulletproof had just run one show and easily did 200, if not 300. For that, you know, bringing in good names and kind of trying to do a mix of old school Georgia Southern wrestling with and bring in some newer indie talent like Dijak and Cody and Jimmy Havoc, you know, for their first show. Bobby Fish was, you know, was there. I mean, JT Dunn before he got his concussion. So it seemed like it's a good thing. I think whenever any kind of company that's kind of takes a hit is forced to close for whatever reason, it's it's kind of bad to me. It feels like it kind of hurts the overall scene as a whole.
Yeah, it's definitely interesting how it all came about with Gallows being like back involved after being gone for a while after he went to the Fed, and then, you know, doing the dojo, getting Mercury involved, and, you know, Cody becomes our first champion, helps book some of these guys. So then from there, you go to, okay, we're having a second show. That goes well. Now they're continuing to, you know, work on the rebranding. And out of nowhere, immediately, you got to stop operations. You got to cease operations. It's kind of crazy. And it's, yeah, there's a lot of rumors of what it could be. I mean, many people can probably just decipher and, you know, put the tail on the donkey, as one would say, as to what, you know, was the cause of it.
I'll tell everybody what the real reason Bulletproof Clothes was. We
crazy bitches, okay?
We killed the business. We started talking about them and how they were running the shows and blah, 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 blah. And all of a sudden, Doris had the clothes. We got that kind of power and pull that, you know, if we talk about your promotion and maybe, you know, throw a little shade, the sun might set on you. So be careful.
I don't think we did throw shade, did we? I thought we were kind of positive.
We all went
to the show. I don't even remember that.
We threw shade at one, the person who wound up being the champion of that promotion, the, I guess, last and first champion of that promotion, who might.
We were only throwing shade as like coincidentally, conveniently, he's the champion. But then we talked about the positives. It's a power move. It's a publicity move. The same reason that Jinder's the champion right now. Like, it's A, it's giving somebody a chance. And B, it would be really cool if we had somebody, you know, who's Indian or of Indian descent at a high, very high, you know, position in our company. If that was the point, then we would have shut Georgia Wrestling down quite a good bit, more so than it is, with all, you know, throwing shade around like we do. Okay? I think you're giving us too much power.
So you're saying as long as we talk bad about a company, they'll go away?
I'm saying that there is power in our words, whether we believe it or not. We need to be very careful with this responsibility, okay? That's all I'm saying.
We talk a lot of trash about, you know, about WWE's decisions sometimes, and they're not going away at any time soon.
Yeah, WWE's not real. We can never kill that territory. I'm sorry.
The rules do not apply to them, pal.
Pretty much.
They are above the law. They are the law.
So back on the Fed real quick, as now we got the little conversation about WrestleMerica Bulletproof out of the way. Let's go back to SmackDown Live real quick. Money in the Bank is happening next month. Well, actually, it's happening this month, as by the time everybody hears it, it'll be June the 1st. And yeah, we have two Money in the Bank ladder matches happening. First, the men are having their match. Kevin Owens, AJ Styles, Baron Corbin, Sami Zayn, Dolph Ziggler, and Shinsuke Nakamura. They're fighting for the contract. How do you guys like this lineup of the Money in the Bank?
I'd take Corbin out. That's just me.
But they like Corbin.
I know they like him, but I don't think he's ready to be that high profile yet. But also, I guess this is a good experience, but I'd prefer to see him in another program and not quite this one yet. That's outside of that, I'm good with this lineup.
Too early to pick a winner?
I know who I hope would win. It is too early to pick a winner, though, because there are so many moving parts in this thing. You got Owens who is just masterfully cutting promos and wanting to be a double champion, which I can't remember the last time we've had an actual double champion outside of Chris
Seth
Jericho
Rollins.
Being
Seth Rollins.
What is Seth?
He had the United States and the World Heavyweight or whatever. Remember, he defended them both on the same show?
Nope.
It was the same.
I don't.
It was you know, like a month after Jay Lethal had both Ring of Honor titles. They gave Seth Rollins both titles. He fought Sting. He fought Sting for the heavyweight championship that night. He fought somebody else for the U.S. belt, Ambrose or something. The night he killed Sting.
So yeah, it wasn't a memorable title run, but I feel that.
Yeah.
So that I feel that if they pull that again with like a Kevin Owens, I think Owens would make it more memorable as a him being a double champion. So not that I want him to win, but I just think still there's so many moving parts in this one that we need to let the weeks play out a little bit more. As we get closer, I'll be able to determine who I feel will be the winner and of that Money in the Bank. And then, of course, then we can speculate on when will they cash it in.
Yeah, well, I would like to see Kevin Owens win it. So I'm going with that as my pick.
Nakamura. Push him to the moon or don't push him at all.
But the bigger news is that they are making history once again, because there's going to be the first ever women's Money in the Bank ladder match. Becky Lynch versus Charlotte versus Natalia versus Tamina versus Carmella.
Tamina and Carmella shouldn't be in that match. You want to talk about people who don't. You want to say Baron Corbin to deserve him to be in that spot. Tamina and Carmella, really?
Leave Carmella in it. At least she's been around for a little bit. Tamina just coming back from wherever she's been. She should not be in this match. Carmella, at least I could see some nice bumps. And I've seen a lot of development from Carmella. I mean, for Pete's sake, she pinned her SmackDown's Women Champion. So, you know, if anybody deserves to be in the match, it's her. But Tamina, not so much. The
champion always gets pinned in non-title situations, though. That's WWE booking 101, though.
But again, Tamina has no place, but at least Carmella has a, you know, legit claim to, I pin the champion, I should be number one contender and have a match for that title. That's something that they could have spun off of and went and ran with. Not that I'm not happy about this her story making match where the women have a Money in the Bank ladder match. That's cool. That's interesting. That's great. Tamina, whatever. I have no words for it. Natty Flair's daughter and the redhead. You know, let's go, girls. Let's get in there. Let's mix it up. Let's throw some ladders around and let's see what they come up with. I think it'll be interesting to see how the ladies do in this one. I think everyone is, especially the SmackDown women, I think they have something to prove at this point. So I think that this is going to give them a stage and the right opportunity to step up and to once again show that, you know what, people are kind of probably talking smack, no pun intended, about the SmackDown's women division, and this is what we can do and it's what we have to offer. I don't see Raw countering with, you know, their Extreme Rules match. The whole stupid kendo stick on a pole sounds almost, I shudder when I hear that, because it gives me the throwback of, like, you know, bra and panty, a paddle on the pole match when they have bras and panties matches and stupid matches like that. That's what that kendo stick on a pole thing sounds like to me. So at least the SmackDown women aren't taking, you know, 1,500 steps backwards. They're keeping current and they're keeping the momentum that the women's divisions on both shows had been moving forward with. Extreme Rules is just, I'm not happy with that match, but we'll see how it actually turns out.
Yeah, and I mean, maybe Charlotte gets her face busted up really bad and they have to do reconstructive surgery and they make her actually halfway pleasant to look at. I mean, that could be something good. I mean, it happened to Joey Mercury and then his career ended. I'm not saying I want her career to end, you know, for a while. I just think she's kind of hideous and terrible all around.
Wow. Hold on, Danny. I'm about to defend Charlotte Flair. I'm glad I'm sitting down because I probably would fall. Danny,
you're a terrible person.
She looks like her father. She favors him greatly, but looks have nothing to do with her skill or lack thereof. She is an athlete. Wrestling was not her first sport, but there are way worse women who I know you've seen then Charlotte Flair. Is she the best? Absolutely not. Are they pushing her to the moon because of her name? Absolutely. But she at least has the opportunity to get better and better as she goes along. And I think that maybe she doesn't seem like she's progressing a lot, but she is slowly but surely getting more and more experience and more comfortable in her role than when she first came onto the scene. So while, you know, the girl's not pretty, she's not that hideous.
She don't wrestle pretty.
She doesn't wrestle pretty, but sometimes wrestling ugly helps the other folks who you're wrestling against because they need to be able to compensate. Natty compensates for every girl out there. Relatively speaking, compared to Natty, who's not ugly? Because Natty has the experience. She has the training. She has the years under her belt that she's been out there doing this, that she learned in the dungeon, that she understands where to be, how to be, what to do. None of these girls have that. So you have your Mickey James come back. You have your Natty Steele here. You have your women with experience who are out there to help this ugly wrestling get pretty. I've got some of your boys out there ugly too, but it kind of is what it is. We're not having their faces busted up and, you know, reconstructive surgery. It'll get better.
They do.
I'm not saying it'll get better. We just have to wait for it. We're asking a lot from these girls who are, you know, maybe not green as goose poop, but they're green and new and just, you know, we know women or we've seen women on the scene who are ready to go, plug and play. We're asking the WWE to give us that, and that's not going to happen because that's not how they operate. That name holds all the cards. If her name was something totally different, of course, we probably wouldn't see her in such a prominent role. But because she has that name, we have to grin and bear it for a little bit until everything falls into place, whether it be her actually wrestling better, whether it be her saying, you know what, this stuff really is just not for me, and gracefully bowing out. We just have to wait until things get better. Perhaps after the women's tournament, where they have this influx of talent come in and where we know whoever they're pulling from the indie scene, I hate to say it, but automatically will be better than Charlotte, and we'll get that person or those persons sliding into roles where we'll get to forget about the Charlotte Flair experience and move on with our lives. But leave the girl's face alone. She can't help her genetics. I mean, Ric Flair's her daddy. The fact that she, you know, is not super ugly is a plus. Just saying. God, look what you made me do.
One thing I will say is you could take one of these women out or two of these women out, but then who do you replace them to? You need a lot of people for a Money in the Bank ladder match.
Yeah, you need bodies. That's true.
And the women's roster currently only has 6 women, one of them being the champion.
So I don't remember who I was talking to, but there was a pretty ingenious idea. You incorporate the Raw ladies or some of the Raw ladies into this match as well, where whoever wins could have a shot at either title. Like, you know, you could have Alexa Bliss win the Money in the Bank and decide that she wants to come back to challenge Naomi for the SmackDown title. Or, you know, somebody from SmackDown winning and deciding they want to go against Bliss for the Raw title, which, you know, if you incorporated both sets of women, you would have a better pool of women to choose from to put into this match, this historic match, to make it more solid. Not that it doesn't have the potential to be solid, but I think if you incorporate maybe an Alexa Bliss, a Mickie James, you pull from Raw some of that high level talent as well. Throw Sasha in there, who, you know, maybe not wrestle pretty, but the girl will take bumps and looks like she's dying because maybe she is. Who knows? That would give a great opportunity. So again, I doubt they do something like that, but it would be interesting if maybe somebody, you know, in Connecticut said, hey, let's throw some Raw girls into this mix, and that changes the whole dynamic of everything. So here's hoping, but, you know, you're right. We need bodies and we need people to be able to throw around bodies. Tamina can at least throw around a body. We'll give her that. Carmella is light enough to be a body that's thrown around and she can jump off of stuff. So we'll see.
So with that, can we pick a winner?
Becky Lynch. Can't bet against our own. I'm sorry. It just can't happen. We gotta, us gingers gotta stick together.
I can't believe I'm doing this again. Ric Flair's baby girl is gonna win that. She's still a heel, even though she teamed with faces. And I think some heel move will get her that Money in the Bank briefcase, and she will cash it in a typical heel fashion. After the babyface champion is beat to a bloody pulp, and she'll slide in and pick up the easy victory.
I'm going to go with the option I hate the most, but it's, I guess, the most annoying way to use this, and I'm going with Carmella.
I think so. Her and Ellsworth can have fancy new clothes and stuff.
I mean, her gold clothes already match the stinking briefcase.
That's true. I mean, and she, you know, she did start in WWE land as a hairdresser.
Moving on to continue to talk about the WWE Women's Division. Let's talk about the This Is Your Life segment on Raw that they had for Bayley. I mean, look, we can agree. The Rock's This Is Your Life segment, hosted by Mankind, Mick Foley, was probably one of the greatest non-wrestling segments in pro wrestling history.
I don't agree on that, no.
That's fine. You can disagree, but my opinion, it was fantastically amazing.
Yeah, a lot of people enjoyed it. And apparently WWE thinks they can try to recapture it.
It has since gone downhill. I mean, the one that they did for Cena wasn't that great either. But this one was just plain horrible. It's kind of like, okay, we are going to try and find the worst actors alive and put them in this segment and then take the best women's wrestler on your roster and just have the crowd crap on it the whole time. I mean, it sucked from the beginning. And the fans, of course, were very loud about it, booing the whole segment. And these people just couldn't act. I mean, I'm no actor. I cannot act either. But I mean, if you're going to act, at least look good doing it. I think they need to do away with this. If this is the way they're going to do it in the future.
Well, see, the thing is, too, is they're doing a show that's intended for a television audience in front of a live studio audience. So, I don't know if for some reason they thought that the TV, the crowd at home might have enjoyed this more than the live crowd would. But, I mean, when I go to a live wrestling show, I prefer to see professional wrestling. Live wrestling, sports entertainment, whatever you call it, people fighting in the ring. Okay, I'm not interested in big, overdrawn sketches and skits in the ring, backstage where I'm watching on a giant screen, all these kinds of things. And I think that sometimes that's hard for a live crowd to sit through so much of that. It's one thing when you're at home, you know. If you don't like and they're talking or whatever, you can get up, you can walk to the, you know, you can walk to the kitchen and get a drink or a snack or whatever. And you're still kind of watching. When you're there at the arena, you expect to be blown away and entertained by everything. And I think a lot of people just have difficulty sitting through segment after segment after segment. You know, 10-minute segment, you get a decent match. That's cool. We like the match. And we're having fun, and then you give us another segment, and we go, oh, man, well, what are we – okay, we got to sit through this. And then that's done, and then another match comes on. They go, yeah, this is fun, and we like the wrestling. And, oh, this – oh, goodness, now we get another thing like this. You know, they did the Breezango thing, and It's Your Life, and seemingly several other things, and that just – I think when the crowd's going good and they're hot, you need to keep doing things that make them hot. when you keep having to pause them and break them down with these sketches and scenes and all this kind of stuff, I think you kill the momentum of the crowd. And yeah, in the South, if there's something they don't enjoy, they're going to let you know about it. Now, a lot of, you know, professional wrestling, improv, comedy, those kind of things, if the crowd's crapping all over what's going on, they wrap it up, speed it up, get it on, get on to the next segment. When you're doing this thing for a live television audience, or, you know, for a TV audience, all this stuff, they're not going to do that. They're just wishing for the days that SmackDown wasn't live so that they could actually mute down the negative crowd reactions. They're just kind of stuck with it. But yeah, it was pretty bad. The crowd definitely didn't like it, and WWE didn't seem to care. They wanted to do it, and they were going to continue to do it, you know, even if people started fandangoing again.
It was painful. It was really, really painful. Yeah, we've talked about Alexa's mic skills. Alexa is great for being a WWE product. We're used to people on the indie scene being able to kind of control a crowd and get their points across and what have you. This segment was too long, too cheesy and cliche, and I don't think it was well thought out. It was pieces of things that they had done in the past that they just kind of threw out there like, okay, here, go with it. And Alexa, bless her heart, you know, tried to say, oh yeah, crowd, I boo this too. But it was just to the point where I wanted the pain to stop. It was just so momentum, like hitting a brick wall for these ladies in the middle of their feud, because it made no sense at all. It was just horrible, horrible, horrible. Give Alexa a freaking microphone, let her cut a promo and go. That segment was just a blatant ripoff of old crap that did not work for this situation. I don't know if they felt that picking on Bayley has been done so many times with, you know, her being a fan, and this was another way to do that without pushing that point, that envelope. But this was, I keep saying painful, because it really was. I winced. I squinted at my TV. I lost my remote control. I was going to turn it off because it was just that bad, and I just did not want to watch. So I hope that they learned their lesson, but this is the WWE. They'll do it again in a few years. Mark the time and the date. I already said it. They'll do it again in a few years.
I hope not. I hope they go away with this. But enough about the WWE. Lucha Underground is coming back this week.
Season 3. Mid-season premiere, baby.
So here we go. And we kick off with Johnny Mundo defending the Lucha Underground Championship against number one contender, The Mac. Of course, by the time everybody listens to this, they'll know the results. But that's not what I want to talk about. What I want to talk about is the next 20 episodes of Lucha Underground. Where do you guys see the level of excitement for the product? As well as where do you think they're going to go as they prepare for a possible season number 4? Of course, Ricochet, Prince Puma in Lucha Underground won't be part of the company if he has anything to say about it. With his contract coming up, I don't think he's planning on renewing. Then you have Pentagon Dark, now mostly known as Penta El Cero Miedo. And, of course, Phoenix, Rey Fénix, who is no longer, you know, with AAA. As, of course, it's Penta. They're both not under contract with AAA. They've moved on, but they're still under contract with Lucha Underground. So your thoughts here on the second part of Season 3 and beyond. What does the future look like for Lucha Underground? Especially now that Dorian is in charge of the company?
I would like to think that their audience grows and continues to grow. I think that now with them coming to Netflix in between this season break here, I think a lot of people who may not have watched Lucha Underground at all, but heard good things and heard good things, you know, sat down and watched season one and two. Maybe they sat down and watched a couple episodes. I would like to think that the second half of season three does a lot better ratings for them. And it may not do ratings on the television channel because not everybody has El Rey. But I would like to think that more eyes get on the product some way through the internet. So I would like to think that they are doing much, much better, or will do much better, and that season four will be even stronger.
I can agree with that. I mean, Lucha Underground, it has this almost cult, old school ECW feel where everybody doesn't have access to it, but you hear about this amazing product, these shows, that it's different from anything that you're currently seeing on TV, that it has like these outrageous storylines where there is some kind of, you know, mystical things happening or what have you. So people who like wrestling, who also like the entertainment portion of it, who now have had the chance to kind of go and try to catch some of this on Netflix to, you know, kind of go over where they've missed out. And even people who don't have the El Rey network, who've called their cable companies like me and go, hey, listen, I need El Rey. I need to watch this show. I think that this new season coming in with Johnny Mundo, who, you know, for all the lack of fanfare that he gets, is still pretty solid out there as far as performing goes. He is solid as an actor, where he's his heel or he's his face, he's his this or his that. He's got a great look, a great physique. He's doing stunts, but he's also a wrestler or whatever. I mean, he's got a lot going for him, and to have him out there at that, you know, opening of season three in this match for his title, I think is a good booking for them, because you put not just the face of your company, but a great face for your company out there to the forefront for people who may be tuning in for the first time and watching to see what all the hype is about. So I'm excited. There's a lot of talent signed currently and unsigned currently who, you know, Lucha Underground could absolutely positively go after and offer contracts, because they've had lots of big names come through there. So why not, you know, continue this role that they're on? And anybody who's, you know, not with one of the big two or three, if you want to call ROH a big company, anybody is potentially pickings on the table for them to go after and throw money to and say, hey, come do a season for us. And, you know, that television exposure, that weekly episodic series exposure should be enough, along with a nice paycheck, for any wrestler, young or old, to say, hey, let's do this. I'm down.
So you guys, pretty much the future is good with Lucha Underground. Any of the bad press that maybe AAA maybe getting could affect Lucha Underground? Or do you think that the American fan base that doesn't watch or pay a lot of attention to AAA and what happens in Mexico, you know, it won't affect their perceptions of Lucha Underground? And the way not that Penta, Phoenix are outspoken about the promotion, the fact that I'm sure that they would wish they were not involved. Of course, they had to change their names because of the dealings with AAA.
I don't think that holds a lot of bearing to most of the American fans. Even if they do watch Lucha Underground and they know that, okay, AAA has a lot of weird controversy, people just go, oh, it's Mexico. Things are weird then. Like, I think that's a lot of people's attitude is, oh, that happens in another country. We don't worry. That's, as long as the Lucha Underground doesn't get affected, I'm not worried about it. You know? As long as it doesn't affect anything that I'm directly care about. You know, and they will, you know, seem to have a few people leaving at the end of the year, at the end of this season. There's always new stars for them to push. There's always new people they have on the roster to move up to those higher level top spots. There's always new people they can bring in to put in to fill in the spots, you know, be it from Mexico, be it from the United States, be it from Japan, from Europe. There are so many great talents out there that could be given a spotlight.
Let's go to Japan for a minute. We talked some about the best of the Super Juniors last week. Now we're into the last night of the best of the Super Juniors before the finals happening on Saturday morning. And, well, Block A is complete. They have, you know, they are now, we now know who is going to be representing Block A in the Best of Super Juniors. Of course, ahead of, ahead of Wednesday morning, we knew that Marty Scurll, Takumi Shinoku, Yoshin Thunder Liger were out of the tournament. And there were many different variables, which kept Dragon Lee, Will Ospreay, Ricochet, and Taishi, and Hiromu Takahashi in the tournament. Well, night 12, the last night of Block A, came as followed. Winless Liger defeated Taishi, eliminating Taishi from contention. Marty Scurll defeated Ricochet, eliminating Ricochet from contention. Takumi Shinoku defeated Dragon Lee, eliminating Dragon Lee from contention. Which brought us to Hiromu versus Ospreay. The winner would be winning Block A of the Best of the Super Juniors. And Ospreay defeats Hiromu. Ospreay now wins Block A and becomes the first foreigner to make it to the finals of the Best Super Juniors back-to-back since one Finn Balor. Hiromu should have won it and gone to the finals of the Block A. He was the guy I predicted to make it to Block A. I predict him to lose, but still, I don't get it. Why you needed to do this. I understand. You know, they do a lot of rematches. So, Hiromu will get his win back.
Not the world's biggest Ospreay fan. I do find it interesting that they had three people who were mathematically eliminated essentially play spoilers. I kind of like that. That's kind of interesting. You know, Liger, essentially his last match in a Super Juniors tournament, you know, and he goes ahead and he wins it. He plays spoiler and ruins somebody else's day. So I actually enjoyed that a lot. And you kind of give him a win, you know, at least through there, just so everybody can kind of have a happy ending of his Super Juniors tournament experience. But yeah, I'm not a big Ospreay fan, but I know he does really well in Japan. There are a lot of people who do enjoy his shenanigans, his antics.
You mean his .. dive?
I mean, if we want to go, you know, play a little hustler there, yeah. The .. dive. So I understand why they would do that. You know, I mean, he did very well last year and people really enjoyed it. And his match with Ricochet was, helped get Vader a nice booking. So I think that, you know, it did help people, and I see why they chose Ospreay. He would just not have been my choice.
I don't want to say I saw this coming, but for the final match, I went, oh yeah, Ospreay's got this. There's, you know, Ospreay's name and his skill have had a lot of publicity around it just for the past year or so. So to have him, you know, be again the second foreigner or whatever since Finn Balor to win this and go into the, you know, it's just kind of one of those, I don't say rite of passages, but one of those things that had to happen. He had to make some kind of history. The way he won the block was a little bit different, a little bit historic. So it just made sense that Ospreay would be the one who would move forward. So I'm not against Mr. Ospreay by any means at all, but I just think that his skill was not the only reasoning behind him winning this.
It's professional wrestling. Somebody's skill never is the reason behind them doing anything.
So here's where we stand now with Block B. With the last night happening in about 6 hours from when we're recording this. So by the time people are listening to the podcast, we will already know the results of what happened with Block B. Well, to kind of take a quick look at it, we have an 8-person tie right now.
So this becomes like the epitome of what they call New Japan math, where yes, multiple people have the same score, but okay, did this guy beat this guy when they fought, or did this guy beat this guy when they fought, and this guy beat this guy, and this guy lost to this guy, so even though he has the most points, he doesn't win. It becomes the ultimate New Japan math scenario.
A lot of variables. So we have ACH, we have Bushi, El Desperado, Kanemaru, Kushida, Taguchi, Tiger Mask, and El Volador Jr. Who do you guys pick as winner of Block B?
I'm going to go on a limb here and say ACH, ACH. That would be nice, ACH and Ospreay. I could see that one. Probably won't happen, but I'd like to see it.
Two foreigners is your prediction.
I know. I was going to say that's probably something that hasn't happened as many times as we would think. About two foreigners being in the finals.
That's what I said. I know that the probability is probably as high as your IQ must be to complete New Japan math in a timely and orderly fashion, but it would be a surprise for one, and two, I think that they would both recognize that they were in very rare air there, and they would do awesome out there to try to be the winner of this, you know, best of for this year. So that's my prediction, and you know, fingers crossed that I'm right, and you know, maybe somebody will buy me a sake later.
I've always liked Kushida. You know, do him and Ospreay and have him tap out Ospreay and get him going against Hiromu again. I know they've done that a few times already, but you know, I still think there's a lot of money to be had in that feud.
Yeah, I mean, either way, at this point, I'm seeing Ospreay as a very possible winner of the whole tournament. And I could definitely see Hiromu versus Ospreay for the title at Dominion with Hiromu getting his win back. I was hoping for ACH, but with Ospreay winning, I'm going to think that they're not going to put two foreigners in the finals. So Kushida, I think, tells a good story of somebody who started the tournament losing matches and then started winning them at the end to make it to be in contention on the last night and then making it to the finals. But I think maybe they will hold off on Hiromu versus Kushida for now and have him lose and then do Ospreay against Time Bomb. But in a mere few 6 hours when the show begins live on New Japan World, for those who are up that early to watch it, can definitely check it out. I most likely will not. I'll check it on the VOD later on that morning. So from there, June the 3rd, live on New Japan World, I'll most likely will be staying up to watch the finals of these Best of Super Juniors as they start setting up the rest of the Dominion card, which is going to be happening on June 11th with the big anticipated rematch from the only 6-star match that Dave Meltzer has ever given.
The only 6-star match in professional wrestling history.
So with that, Let's move back to the U.S. where we're going to be watching this Sunday live on the WWE Network for only $9.99. The Raw exclusive special Extreme rules.
Extravaganza.
Monday Night Raw is going into the extreme. So, guys, I want to let some predictions here. Let's start with the mixed tag team match. Rich Swann and Sasha Banks versus Noam Dar and Alicia Fox.
Heels win. Heels win because Sasha last night tried to snatch Foxy Ball. Pulled that girl's track out of her hair. And if girls, if you wear weave, you know that when somebody snatches one of your tracks out, there is hell to pay. That's where I'm going with that. Believe it. That's all I got to say.
Wrong match. I feel for
what?
You don't say believe that. That's the wrong match.
Oh, my bad.
That match comes later in the show.
I'm waiting on somebody to snatch Roman's weave out too. I'm sorry. My bad.
Yeah.
Danny, who are you liking in this match?
Come on, man. The married uncouple. Of Rich Swann and Sasha Banks, man.
Yeah, I gotta root for Swann and Banks here because Alicia Fox just annoys me. She annoys me. I can't root for her. Staying within the 205 and below, Neville will be defending the Cruiserweight Championship against Austin Aries in a submission match. As we saw, Neville got tapped out by Austin Aries earlier this week.
It's interesting as not to say he's not versed, but we've never really seen Neville take to a lot of submissions, especially within the WWE. Not to say that he doesn't have some up his sleeve. He's a tenured veteran in the world of professional wrestling, world travel, multiple times over. But Aries has in the past utilized a submission as a favorite finishing maneuver. The Last Chancery has won him a lot of matches over the years. So I think Aries might have the advantage going in because maybe he's more familiar with a game plan that leads to a submission finish. But Neville might be able to surprise Aries by digging deep into his bag of tricks and pulling out some strong submissions. I still think I have to give the heads up to Aries on this one. As Aries to tap out Neville once again, more than likely with the Last Chancery.
I like Austin Aries. I always have. I would love to see him get this Cruiserweight title and have a nice fair run with it. That being said, in championship situations, Neville has shown to be a very strong champ so far. So while he tapped out and Aries made a huge deal of it at 205 Live this past Tuesday night, Neville is still the champion. And I think at this Extreme Rules match that Neville is going to, I think he broke out the Rings of Saturn. And perhaps he's going to utilize that or some other maneuver that will help him retain the Cruiserweight Championship. I'm going Neville.
I'm going Neville, too. I think that he's going to retain. I could see Aries winning, but I would probably prefer that. I just think that Neville's going to find a way to win this match. And either the feud continues or we're going to see a new challenger. So I wouldn't be surprised if either one, but I'm going with Neville at this time. Next, for the Intercontinental Championship, Dean Ambrose versus The Miz. If Ambrose is disqualified, he will lose the title.
That is extreme. Extreme as in no extreme. You get extreme and you lose.
Extremely lame. That's what it is.
Which more times than not, when they do that, the champion ends up, the happening. I mean, that's Edge lost. Dolph Ziggler became world champion because Edge, used the movie he wasn't supposed to. That kind of thing, So when they set that stipulation, usually they lead towards the person breaking it. So I have to go with Mikey.
I'm going with The Miz, too. I think that that he does a great job as IC champion. I think that him, you know, the work that he's been doing as a heel champ is fantastic. And I don't think that Dean Ambrose's current championship reign has blown anyone away. So this is be a perfect time to get the title back on The Miz and, you know, get people excited about a babyface who can actually go after The Miz and try to take the title away from him rather than maybe not caring about the IC title. So I'm going with The Miz.
Don't call him Mikey. It is The Miz, okay? Respect that man and the A-lister that he is and the absolutely stellar performance that he's been putting on for the past year and a half or so, it seems like. I love Dean Ambrose. I really, really do. His IC title reign, I forget that he's the IC champion. That should not be. The only time that I was reminded is when everybody was trying to fight to become the number one contender for the belt since the Universal Champion is off defending. Which galaxy is he in this week? I don't know. But
he hits a lot of them.
Right. So that's the only reason I remember that Dean Ambrose was the IC champion. That being said, The Miz is The Miz, and he is a great heel. You guys are absolutely right in all the points that you made. I think that there is some shenanigans that will, of course, be afoot, that maybe perhaps somebody will send Marie to the back so she can't interfere, so she won't be the reason that Ambrose loses, but Ambrose is going to lose his match, I think, via pinfall. The Miz is just going to straight up beat him, and that will be the changing of the guard, so to speak, and put The Miz back at a nice, huge number as far as IC title reigns goes.
Looming in on that Jericho number, baby.
Gotta get that Rockstar number, and The Miz is trying, and he might succeed. I think he's got a few more good years at him before he hangs up the boots. So he is definitely gunning for that Jericho number. And, you know, who better than The Miz? Nobody.
Canyon. Because nobody's better than Canyon, okay? That's been established years and years ago. So if you say who's better than The Miz, the answer is Canyon. Because The Miz can't be better than Canyon because nobody's better than Canyon.
You're drunk, Danny, okay?
The best there is, was, and ever will be.
Next match, the Hardy Boys defending tag team championships against Sheamus and Cesaro in a steel cage match, where I am assuming Jeff Hardy's going to get on top of that cage and do some flippy move that's going to wow the crowd.
You think that they would do a ladder match? It's the Hardy Boys, but, you know, why not?
Well, they did debut in a ladder match at WrestleMania.
Well, yeah. No, but that's, and you know, but in WWE, the Hardys are known for the ladder matches, the TLCs. They have done a lot of cage matches, too, but it's the ladder matches that have always been the most memorable. But I guess maybe that's why you do a cage. You want to change it up a little bit.
I think that there will be a ladder in the cage. Remember these WWE cages now have space where you can walk around. So I'm pretty sure that maybe not the biggest ladder in the world, but I would be surprised if a ladder did not incorporate itself into this match in some way, shape, or form. And then, yes, Jeff Hardy jumps off of the damn ladder onto someone and damn near kills himself in the process. That being said, I think this heel team of Cesaro and Sheamus is on
awesome.
A role, and I think that them beating the Hardys in a cage match and kind of quote unquote putting them out the pasture would be the ending of this match. So maybe this is the, I know everybody's probably hoping, but maybe they get the Hardys such a beat down that they break them.
Well, see, and here could be the finish of the match is they've used this in the past with the Hardy Boys, as you know, when they were supposed to be climbing over, escaping the cage to win the match, and Matt escapes, and then Jeff's up there and he's about to escape, and he sees the glory of the cage dive, and so he goes for the cage dive, and then he takes too long and he misses, okay? And so he's laid out and then he gets pinned and he loses the match. So that could be something that that could be what breaks the Hardys. And yes, Cesaro and Sheamus win the match that way.
Jeff is a spot monkey, you say?
He's like the original spot monkey. Come on. He was spot monkey before the term was spot monkey. He was a vanilla midget before the term vanilla midget came around.
God. A vanilla spot monkey. All right.
That's it. He's the inspiration behind the world's most famous vanilla spot monkeys, and they've said that 100 times over. You know, when they were in their backyard, they used to be like, hey, man, we're going to be Matt and Jeff the Hardy Boys, and it's going to be awesome. Someday we're going to be the next Hardy Boys.
Look at them now.
They're not the next Hardy Boys. They're the first Jacksons.
I think that the Hardy Boys are going to retain the championships. I think that Jeff is going to flip while Matt is going to delete. If anybody's going to beat the Hardy Boys for the titles, it's going to be a couple of top guys. So until the revival comes to take what's rightfully theirs, the Hardys will retain. Then in a candlestick on a pole match for the women's championship. Yeah.
Sticks and poles, baby.
Just hearing again this paddle on a pole just gives me back to the archaic attitude, late 90s, early 2000 eras of women's wrestling, where it was just horrible because you had all these stupid gimmick matches where the women would prance around. These two girls, Bailey and Alexa, are more than on a pole match, and to just insert them into something like that is a disservice to the work and the hard work that they've put in to make this women's wrestling, to make this division be less of a joke. I understand it's supposed to be extreme, but they could have just had a kendo stick match and been over and done with it. To stick it on a pole was just, I don't know, it was almost sexist in my opinion. It was truly sexist. It really, really was. And again, it's one of those things where somebody is sitting back someplace in Connecticut and they're laughing their asses off. They think that this is perfect. They think that this is cool. They think that this is right. Where it's not, they are disrespecting them as women. They're disrespecting them as athletes. I don't usually stand on a feminist soapbox and preach to whomever is listening, but this is ridiculous. It is an absolute downright travesty of everything that this whole women's evolution revolution is supposed to stand for. They're knocking them back into the archaic wrestling ages for women, and they might as well put them in bikinis or their bra and panties while they're at it. Let's just be honest. That's what they are like referring to in their not so subtle way by sticking this stupid thing on a pole. So that being said, I hope they have a freaking good match. I hope they wrestle their tails off. And then, you know, whoever gets the kendo stick, I don't even know how you're supposed to win it. Do you win by hitting your opponent with a thing, getting it down off the pole?
Typically pole matches like that, the match is won by pinfall or submission. But you can only use there's only that one weapon is allowed to be used. Sometimes they say you have to get the weapon down and use it on your opponent before you can go for a pin. Others, they just say if it's there, if you want it, you don't have to use it. You don't have to get it. Match ends by pinfall or submission, but that's the only weapon that's legal. Anything else would get you disqualified like in a home match. They haven't been too specific yet. They might, you know, talk about it in the pre-show. If Corey Graves isn't getting too many texts or something, he might talk about it. We don't know. Could go any either way, but on a pole matches are weird no matter what. And like you said, it kind of brings a lot of weird sexist things. You know, like are they trying to make jokes about the fallacy of a pole, or are they making jokes about like women wrestlers as strippers? You know, with the pole, like there's. You could, like you said, they could have just done a kendo stick match and just had three or four kendo sticks lying around the ring, and they just beat the dog trash out of each other with those kendo sticks. You know, but who knows? You know, who knows? Vince McMahon loves that stuff.
Somebody's getting their jolly off reading fan fiction and going, oh, hey, look, everybody loves Alexa and Bailey. Let's put something phallic up and just let it go and let the little nerds run wild. I mean, come on. Let's grow up. Let's be adults. Let's move into, I don't know, the 21st century maybe and get over yourselves. So, again, I want those girls to have a great match. I want them to just absolutely positively tear it down. I'm a little scared that they won't be able to, but I hope that I'm wrong in this case. Who wins this match? It's for the title. Alexa is going to retain. Bailey's going to give it that old college try. She's going to be able to
use maybe the she even gets the stick and hits Alexa with it, but somehow still can't win the match.
Right, exactly. That's how I see that. She'll be able to use the stick and to channel and project that inner rage and for being teased and what have you, but she still won't be able to get the job done. She won't be able to win this big one against Bliss, who is just an outstanding competitor and a great foil for her and just any girl that they put against her at this point. So Bliss for the win.
I'm definitely on board with that. To me, Alexa Bliss wins, retains the championship. She will continue to do the great job she's been doing as champion. She helped carry the SmackDown Live division, and now she's got to do it with Raw. That brings us to our main event for Extreme Rules, a fatal five-way Extreme Rules match to determine the number one contender for the Universal Championship when it gets defended back on Earth at Great Balls of Fire. Roman Reigns versus Seth Rollins versus Finn Balor versus Bray Wyatt versus Samoa Joe.
Joe. So it's fatal five-way, meaning it's only one pinfall, right?
Yes.
That's usually what they do with the fatals.
That is
correct. As opposed to elimination. So we go Joe. He's gonna kill every single one of them.
Joe's gonna kill you. Joe's gonna kill
all of you at the same time.
Gosh. Joe's a monster. I mean.
He's a serial killer. He pretty much is. We're looking at a mass... there will be a mass grave needed at the end of this match.
Joe's the new taker. All right. Yeah, I like Joe. I really do. He's everything that he looks like he is. He's a legitimate badass. Samoan submission machine. Et cetera. He will hurt you and put you down. But there's a man out there who was not pinned for this Universal Championship. He had to relinquish it. He had to give it up. He's back, and he has something to prove. He wants to prove that his title win was not a fluke, that he is everything that you don't understand, that you don't know what he is. He's part demon. I think Balor wins this and goes demon versus beast. That's what I see.
So you don't think he goes demon for the ladder match?
No, absolutely not.
Okay.
Demon comes out for the beast. You have to have the demon against the beast. The demon is not really a ladder-based creature.
I'm with Tamika. I believe that Finn Balor will win this match, become the number one contender, and head to Great Balls of Fire to challenge Brock Lesnar for the Universal Championship. I just don't see a world in where they'll try to take Joe or, you know, anyone else for this match at this point right now. I think you still have that question that's unanswered. What will happen with Finn Balor? You know, he had, like Tamika said, to relinquish the belt. He deserves a shot, and I think that this is a chance to make as much money as you can. You need a good match double sell. I don't see right now Samoa Joe versus Brock Lesnar be a main event that people will be clamoring for come July for Great Balls of Fire.
The problem is, though, two of the four guys who Joe's going against are fragile, okay? One of them he's already broken. Okay. He's going to break. He's going to do it again.
No.
He's going to do it again.
He will not break Balor.
He's going to break Balor. He's going to break Rollins. He's going to break.
He's not there to break Balor. He is there to successfully.
Break everyone.
No. Seth has not finished paying for his crimes against the McMahon, Helmsley, power couple, whatever the hell we're calling them. Joe is there to throw a monkey wrench, a roadblock, and a fist at Seth Rollins to put him in his place, to make him know that they are not done with him yet. That sounds like what's-his-face's tagline. Sorry, Braun, I'm stealing it. But Joe is there to remind him that, you know, Triple H and Stephanie send their regards. He's their personal hitman, one-man hitman squad. They send their regards, and they want you to know that every time you try to come up, I'm going to put you down, whether it be from the top as the boss or as the hitman Joe, you know, taking your legs from you or taking your knee or opportunity from you. So everybody else is collateral damage. I think Finn is quick enough and smart enough to perhaps steer clear of Joe's wrecking squad and to take opportunity to get rid of him when his back is turned. So again, he can pick up the win for this match, because again, he's got more to prove than anyone else in this match. I really, really believe, because again, he never lost that championship and now he has to battle for it. He didn't say, just give me a match. He's fighting his way up. He's going for it. So let's watch him as he ascends and we break out the demon. The demon versus the beast will be a draw. Finn Balor's mystique, this demon persona, when they had it the last time and they brought it out, people were fully invested in it. It was something new and different and fresh, and something that was enough character driven and cartoony, but still cool, where even as an adult or a child, you were okay with this demon persona. The merchandise sales were there, everything was in place. So now you bring the demon against the beast, Brock Lesnar, who is missing out in the universe, who again has beaten some of your quote unquote heroes, who've decimated folks that you didn't care about, but you know that he's, you know, a legit badass. You put Finn, the smaller guy, in this demon persona, who's, you know, the anti-hero against this beast incarnate, with Paul Heyman talking the hell out of this match. That's going to put people on the network and make them want to spend this $10 to just see that match. So that's why Balor, I think this is a have to win for Balor.
And that will happen this Sunday. The number one contender will be determined. Who do you think is going to be the number one contender? Tweet us at FOW Radio, hashtag Stream Rules, and let us know who you think is going to win the 5-way Extreme Rules match for number one contendership. And with that, that is the show for tonight. We thank you all for listening. As always, we're here every week. Next, we will be chit-chatting post-Extreme Rules and taking a look at whatever else is happening in the world of professional wrestling. Make sure you give us a follow. Danny's on Twitter at Danny F in Danger. Tamika's on Twitter at Mika Villas. I'm on Twitter at YellowmanPA. Subscribe to the Wrestling with Wars audio network, SoundCloud, iTunes, and Android devices. Please do a solid rate and review. We'd love to hear the feedback from you on how we're doing with all the shows.
6-star reviews only.
Yes, 100%. Give us 6 stars.
6 stars only. We will accept nothing less.
We're perfect, damn it.
Check out WrestlingWithWars.com for all the family of podcasts, as well as articles and reviews. So with that, again, thank you for listening. Until next time, keep watching wrestling.